So, Damon, you've won Silverstone. We all remember that. But you won twice at Imola in 95 and 96.
Damon Hill exits the last corner, crosses the grid, comes up alongside his pits and takes the chequered flag to win the San Marino Grand Prix at Ferrari's home track.
I'm just delighted, you know, it's such a terrific race to do well in. Imola is a superb place to race because of the crowd, the fantastic turnout, and it's great.
How did that compare in front of all those Ferrari fans?
Well, I wasn't driving for Ferrari, so it's slightly, probably they were disappointed to see a Brit up there. But it was a very emotional win for us at Williams because obviously after 94... and the awful things that happened then. So come back in 95 and win the race. And, you know, it kind of had a healing effect, I guess, in some ways. It's not the circuit's fault. You know, unfortunately, it's got some... It had a dark weekend. And but, you know, it's great racing. You know, it's great to be there and to have won also to become... You know, in the year I became champion as well. Imola has got a history, and I love the circuits with history, and especially if there's a link to Italy and Ferrari, then you know you're going to be remembered. If it was a golf club, you'd have a plaque, wouldn't you, on the wall, and you'd have your name etched on the, you'd get on the board, as they say. So I'm on the board in Imola.
We can have words, surely.
Yeah, it'd be great. The Imola club.
That is a club I want to be a part of. I've got goosebumps just thinking about it. Welcome then to F1 Nation, our look ahead to the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix and the return of the F1 Sprint at Imola. Who better to talk us through such a circuit than someone that's won there twice before, Damon Hill, and Davide Valsecchi, our favourite Italian stallion. How are you?
Ciao to everyone. I'm very well. You? How are you?
We're good, Davide. You sound like you're near a track, or you're coming to us from a car, and I can hear cars that sound like they're racing.
Yeah, because I'm in Monza right now, so I'm on the paddock in Monza, and they're running, GT car, yeah, normal car.
You just can't get enough of it, can you? When do you see your wife and kid? I mean, for God's sake, get home, be a family man, and then start lapping up the Tifosi action, will you?
Yeah, you're right. But, you know, it's our time. I told you at the first race this year, it's our time. So we are leading the championship with Ferrari. We are so passionate. Everyone loves Formula One now in Italy. So it's our moment. We need to use it and to enjoy it.
I was going to say, Davide, we were having a chat before the season and we were saying, you know, how's it going to go? And you were getting very excited. And I was trying to tell you to calm down. Don't get too excited. This happens. This always happens.
Never tell Davide Valsecchi to calm down.
I mean, you can't get him to calm down. But I mean, now you are absolutely about to pop, aren't you? I mean, it's fantastic. You're leading the championship, coming to Italy with Ferrari.
He's going to crowd surf his way into the circuit. You know that, come Thursday.
Yeah, we're going to try it. Yeah, to be honest, what is sure is that already Formula One in Italy, it's become very popular in the last few years because there were these young kids, Verstappen, Leclerc, Lando Norris, that brings up Formula One from the young generation. No? But now with Ferrari that is strong enough to fight for the championship, believe me, the atmosphere will be unbelievable in Imola. And I'm sure that will be one of the best weekend in Formula One this season. I mean, usually we go to England in Silverstone, and it's amazing, no, the atmosphere. Last year we went to Netherlands and it was just fantastic. I think this year we are going to be in Imola and Monza, and we are going to feel the same atmosphere, something really special. And I'm sure that it will be a great weekend. Last year also the race in Imola was unbelievable. Did you remember? It was raining just in the grid before the race, and then the race was spectacular. I don't know if we are going to be so lucky to have a very enjoyable and funny race, but I'm sure that we are going to enjoy the weekend.
What is the feeling in Italy, Davide? Do we think this Ferrari challenge this year is real? I mean, Charles has won two of the opening three races. Do you think they can keep the momentum going now?
I don't know, but we are so confident. They are so confident in Ferrari. I don't know. it's not so easy to predict something different for the next few races. I mean, okay, we have Mercedes that is, they are scoring so many points, right? But they have not the performance. To be honest, I cannot believe that in the next few races there will be someone quicker and faster than Ferrari. The car is so good. You can see also from the onboard. It's not so easy to explain how the engine could close the gap and be the strongest engine in the grid in only 2 months and a half of winter without any testing. That is not so easy to explain about the power of the engine and the power unit. But about the car, I mean, from the onboard, the front is so easy to turn. The minimum speed is so high. The car is so balanced. I mean, to drive, the car is just perfect. And seems hearing the driver and watching the onboard much, much, much easier than all the other cars. So it's not so easy to predict something different for the next few races. I told you at the first race, we are going to smash everyone, Ferrari, in the first few races. And I'm thinking that until Miami, I don't think there will be no one else that could challenge, that can challenge Ferrari in terms of speed and performance. Then you have Verstappen, you have Hamilton, that they are fantastic driver, and maybe someone can fight. But I think he's the best team at the moment, and is going to be for the next few races for sure.
Well, look, far be it from me to dampen your spirits, because I love an excited Davide Varsecchi. But one person who isn't thoroughly enjoying the party at the moment is Carlos Sainz. A miserable time for him in Australia. So how do we get him back into play? Obviously, he's been on the podium. We know he's a very talented driver, but he's not yet comfortable in this great car that you're talking about. So what does he need to do?
And Natalie, it's very complicated, his condition right now, because he knows that he has the great chance to win this championship, because the car is quick enough to give him the chance to fight for the championship and to become champion. But the trouble is that he has by side someone that is probably more talented than him. And so he knows also that he needs to rush and to be quick to take victories and to take the leadership of the championship. Because if not, in Ferrari, you know that we are famous to do strategy, and we are famous in Italy to choose the first driver, give all the energy to only one driver. So I think it's crucial, the timing for Sainz. And he was not so lucky last weekend. He made some mistakes that at the end cost him a lot, because he retired from the race. And so it's not his best moment. But is the most important time of his life and of his career. So he needs to speed up and to be on top. If not, he's going to lose the chance.
Davide, that's huge. It's almost a career-defining race coming up in Imola this weekend.
Yeah, you don't have the same feeling, because believe me, I push a bit for him. I like the guy. I know the family. I cannot say he's my friend, but I know him very well, and I would like for him to be champion, no? But I'm thinking that if he's not going to solve the situation, and I mean in saying solve, I mean if he's not going to win the next 2 or 3 races, he's going to be the reserve, the second driver of Leclerc, that probably is going to become the world champion. And to be the second one is not so easy to upset for us, that we are driver. No, we would like to be the best, and at least the best in your team. So for him, the condition from my point of view is not easy at all, because there's no way. The car is competitive, so the only way is winning. And in terms of winning, for a clerk, it's a bit easier at the moment.
Davide, you just touched on the point. I have this question, which we have a little debate going, I think, with our Sky colleagues. You work with Sky Italy, but you know the Sky team we have. And in there, we have our debates about how good is Charles Leclerc. And some people think he's okay, and some people think he's much better than that. Where do you rate Charles Leclerc as a driver?
Okay. So for you, that you became in the past world champion in Formula One, probably is easier to answer. But I think, Damon, with all the respect, that probably this man is strong enough to be special when it counts and when the time is important. So probably was strong enough and talented enough to destroy Sebastian Vettel as a teammate when he arrived in Ferrari, and he took immediately the leadership into the team as a first driver. And probably was not perfect last year because the car was in the midfield. And there, his talent was a bit, underestimated because racing for him in the mid of the group, in the mid of the pocket, was a bit complicated. But I think he has something special because when he's important, last part of the qualify session, the lap that can bring you on pole position, the start, the restart of the races, handle the battle with the champions like Verstappen and Hamilton. What is important, he can do this type of things and this type of battle, this type of racing in a very easy way. From my point of view, he has the talent, he has the quality to become a world champion. That is my thought. I'm interested to hear your side, that you became a real world champion in Formula One. So what do you think about it?
Well, I agree with you, David. Honestly, why would I argue with you? Because you obviously know a lot more about this guy and Ferrari than I do. I mean, I will say one thing. You're supposed to be a journalist and you're not supposed to be biased, but you have expressed an extreme preference for Ferrari, which is excusable, I think, if you're an Italian. Is that fair to say? You guys have to support everything with Ferrari, don't you?
Yeah, to be honest, we suffered so much in the last few seasons. And when I'm... to be honest, when I judge the driver in the truck, I want to be 100% honest and objective. But in terms of working on a TV, that in the last few years we just saw winning Mercedes, and then when something changed, Verstappen won and Ferrari was always in the mid of the group, we suffered so much the situation. So I think that this year Ferrari has the great chance to fight for the championship, and that they would like for them to stay on top and to fight till the end. And in terms of driver, I'm honest, I really love Sainz, the attitude, the family. And so I would like for him to see him winning. But then there is the track, and in the track there are no friends. That counts only the speed, the attitude, the charter, the charisma. And I think that in this part of the racing style, Leclerc has something more. For sure, in the last few years, Hamilton showed to everyone that is built differently. For sure, Verstappen, as soon as he jumped in Formula One, we realized that, oh, this man, if he starts to be ready with his head, he has the gifted of the speed. And every single quali, every single race, we can see that he's special. Leclerc, looking him from... Formula 3, he won immediately. Formula 2, he won immediately as a rookie. Then first year in Formula 1 with Sauber, and was special, he was in the point. First year in Formula 1, first year in Ferrari. He started to destroy it after two races. Vettel in qualified, that is his best characteristic. If he's not going to lose his head this year, I'm sure that he's going to fight for the championship. Then if Ferrari is strong enough to stay there until the end, probably yes. But consider the problem on the technical side that all the rivals as at the moment, I can say that Ferrari is going to fight at least until mid of season. Because Mercedes, how you can say in Imola they are going to solve? The bouncing is going to solve. The speed is going to solve. The race pace. Too many problems to be solved in 2 weeks, Damon. I don't think that Mercedes, they are going to win races and be on pole in the next 5 or 6 racing weekend. We need to give them at least 3 or 4 months to solve the technical problem that they have. And all the issues in Red Bull on the reliability side, they are too many to see Verstappen is going to win the next 7 races. How we can say that? Only 3 racing weekend, they retired already twice. Incredibly lucky the condition for Ferrari at the moment. So we need to believe it. They need to believe in that because the championship seems possible this year. That is my feeling.
Yeah, and we have a saying in the UK that says you have to make hay whilst the sun shines. Sun doesn't shine too much in the UK, so we're busy making hay whenever we get the chance. The point is, though, Davide, is that you have to capitalise now whilst your competitors are struggling. And that is exactly what Ferrari are doing, apart from Carlos.
Yeah, for sure. 100% right, and agree with you, because you need to put points now, winning race now that Verstappen has a technical issue, winning race now that Lewis Hamilton is only good and not special, because then maybe the rivals, they are going to come back and you need to have so many points. It's the problem of Sainz from my point of view. I push a bit for him on the personal side, but if in the next 7 or 8 races we are going to see a Formula One weekend where Hamilton is fighting for the victory, Verstappen is always there, then you have Leclerc. If Sainz is going to be better than Leclerc at the mid of the season, is already late to win this championship. I think that Leclerc in the next 3 or 4 races, he could win every single race. And if you do something like this, and at mid-season you have so many points of advantage, then you can just manage the advantage. You know that I know that it's not easy, because when you are leading the championship and you never done it before, you have pressure, you have media, you have so many psychological trouble. But Leclerc is special, and I think that he's the type of guy that when in racing in front with the top guys is performing better, and that is the quality of the champion. Alonso, if he has a little chance, is going to perform. Lewis Hamilton, well, last year felt the smell to become the greatest in the history. He was racing like God in the heart. I mean, he was racing so well, and he destroyed Verstappen when he felt that it can be his time. I mean, I think that Leclerc, when he's important, is racing better. And it's a great quality, I hope. But I don't know if Sainz has this type of quality. He never won in Formula One before. So it's not easy to ask to a driver that he never won a race to become world champion. I don't know. I don't know, Damon, what he think. But I'm always thought in the sport that you have to do one step after another. And He needs to already take the first step, Sainz, to take the first victory, and then he can think about the championship. So it's not so easy to predict Carlos Sainz world champions this year. I mean, it's risky.
Davide, it's a bit like taking a penalty in a World Cup final, isn't it? You know, until you've actually got the thing in the net, everyone can kick a ball, and it's the situation, it's that bit. So we're going to find that totally.
It's the pressure cooker. Yeah.
Well, it's what you're made of, isn't it? It's ultimately what you're talking about is the guy raises his game to the situation. That's what we're going to find out. I mean, will he be able to cope? But if it's going to be easy, he'll cope. But if he's going to be under pressure from a challenger, then it's more difficult.
One thing that I would like to underline also is that in the challenging of being the first driver in Ferrari, it's not also easy for Carlos Sainz. Because he was not also lucky in the first 3 races. I mean, last qualify, he took the red flag 3 seconds from the starting line for the line of the lap. I mean, it was a lucky quali, and he took out from him the chance to have to set one of the fastest lap. Probably was already in second row with that lap, you know, and he get to the integrated track for the final lap of his quali. Late because they had a problem with the engine starter, and he lost 2 minutes in the box. I don't know if you know it. So he had, instead of having 2 laps of preparation to warm up the tires, he only had 1 lap. And so when he approached the last lap, not having a lap already in the bank, and with the risk that if you make a mistake, you are last in the Q3, so you are 10th. He had the mistake. And the tires that were not perfect. So, I mean, was a very difficult situation. And then I can also understand his mistake in the race. Strategy, that for me was wrong. Hard compound to start with. He had a problem. He had an issue with the steering wheel during the formation lap to go in the grid. So he practiced the start and he stole twice. They need to change on the grid that the steering wheel. Already they have the hard compound that is not easy to handle in the first lap. Then he had the 2 practice starts where you stalled. He had the start, he had the poor one. then the pressure to recover position, you are already under pressure. You already made the mistakes. I mean, I can imagine how difficult is it while your teammate is winning the race easily. So, Damon, I don't know what you think, but if your teammate is winning and you are struggling into the trouble, hey, the race of the driver becomes very difficult, my friend. What do you think?
We've got another saying in England, which goes with Natalie's, is that it never rains, but it pours. Which means, yeah, it all goes wrong at once.
We do love a weather saying, don't we?
We're obsessed
all mildly
with it.
obsessed with it.
Davide, we like to call you our Italian correspondent on F1 Nation. But quickly before you go, AlphaTauri, this couldn't be a more local race for them, just 20 minutes down the road. What's the word on the street about the kind of season they're having?
I would expect them much better than what they are at the moment. They have a Gasly that is a great one, and especially in quali. But they are not performing so well like in the last few years. So I'm a bit worried for them. In Imola, in the last few races, in the past, they were just amazing. They were special. I think they qualified the fifth, no, last year, and something like that, Gasly. So they need to score points and to be there, because they are fighting every time this year around 11th, 10th, 9th position. And probably it's not the position that Gasly deserves as a driver, because probably his speed is to be 15, 16 in the grid. That is my thought. So I would like for them to have a good race, also because, like you said, they are very close to the track. It's his home race for them. And so I would like to see them on top. But the problem, they are not changing so much the value of the team in the first few races. I mean, I can say that Ferrari is strong. If Verstappen is special, he can be first. If not, he's just behind Ferrari. And then I can see that there is Mercedes. And then there is for sure Alpine in the top 10. And then there is Norris and Ricciardo. So I cannot imagine that it's going to be so much different, because the trend and what we saw in the first few races was like that. So if you are asking me, Gasly is going to be fifth, sixth, where it was last year, almost impossible is my thing. But I love Norris, because we could see from when he was 16 that he has something different than the others. I love Russell. Oh, Russell. Russell is my favorite one. No, Damon, you know why I love Russell?
We just say Russell. You know, it's much more exciting the way you say it.
You know why I love Russell? Because in Italy, I was keep saying on TV, this man is special. The same attitude of Leclerc, of Verstappen, of probably Norris, this type of guy, I was saying. No, he's having a fantastic quali in Williams, but then in the race, he's not able to take points. No, in the race, sometimes he's behind Latifi or his teammate, and they were saying, okay, but he has not the car. He's not the car to deliver the result, and it's incredibly important for the driver having the car and having the speed. Believe me, he's special. As soon as he jumped on Mercedes in Bahrain, did you remember how special he was, that he was leading the race, he was going to take the victory? This man.
Echo.
He was able.
I got it.
Sorry, put it out. This man, he was able to put his best performance in the most important day of his life. So when you are able to do like this, from my point of view, you have the attitude to become world champion in Formula One. That is my thought as a driver. So, at the beginning of the season, after three races, we are immediately realized that probably Russell was strong enough, like Vasseki thought in the past, because he's anyway racing Hamilton and is not destroyed every single weekend like was Bottas or all the teammates of Hamilton before him.
He's second in the championship, for goodness sake.
Yeah, he's amazing. I mean, I really love him. I really love him. I mean, as a driver, I think that is good. He has speed, but his head is top one. In the managing of the racing, is even better than Norris, that we consider also in Italy a huge talent. In the lower category, Russell was a bit better than Norris. I know that the head side, the with the experience, you can improve it a lot. But believe me, he has an incredible capability to manage the race and the situation, Russell. And he's always calm and patient, like Hamilton sure has to be in the past. That is magnificent, Hamilton, in that. He's very patient. He's very quiet when the situation is not good. Sainz didn't have to be quiet when he was in trouble in Australia, but he was too passionate. He made mistake. He was confused. While Hamilton was in when he's in the back, he's always racing well, waiting for a better moment. He's a master on this side, and probably Russell has the same attitude. So. He's going to be world champion one day. It's only a question of time.
Davide, we're coming back to Imola, and George has not had a particularly wonderful record there with some drops. You know, he dropped the ball with behind the safety car, wasn't it, in the Williams, and then he had a collision with Valtteri a few years back. So it's not happy hunting ground for George.
I agree with you, but we need to underline that he was very good in quali, eh? So when he destroyed the car and the safety car, going down to Acqua Minerale, do you remember that he crashed on the inside? Was a huge mistake, to be honest. But he was there. I think he was ninth at the time of the race behind the safety car, 10th. He was in the point with Williams that he was stronger. So, he didn't score any type of result and probably has only bad memories about Imola. But he needs to realize that is second in the championship in front of Lewis Hamilton, that for everyone that is racing is a master. And in the past in Imola, he was bloody quick. So be confident, George Russell, you're going to be fine.
Davide, thank you so much for your time. We're going to let you get back to all things Monza while we can continue talking about all things Imola, but have a great time down there.
Ciao. See you there. See you in Imola. We are going to enjoy the weekend. Ciao, ragazzi. Grazie. Ciao, ciao.
Grazie, principe. Well, he is a force of nature. Of that, there is no doubt. But what did you make of what Davide had to say, Damon?
Well, it was interesting because you have your own impressions as a driver and you wonder whether they're unique or whether they are completely contrary to everyone else's opinion. But what he was suggesting and what he was saying so fulsomely and with so much knowledge actually confirmed to me that I'm along the right tracks. You know, I would agree with a lot of what he had to say. He was concerned for Carlos because of the difficulties, but he also defended him and made the point that, you know, sometimes things happen. And I also think on Charles Leclerc, his summary of him as a driver was sort of what I suspect as well, which is that he's a driver who responds to the moment, and he likes, you know, when he sees a sniff of victory or an opportunity, he's there. I think it's a question of raising as the stakes get higher and the complications and the challenges get more difficult. You know, some drivers just take opportunities, and he has taken the opportunities he's had. He's also stuffed it into the wall in Baku and stuff in qualifying, you know, when he shouldn't have done, and he gets upset about that, but at least he's trying.
And Monaco,
yeah, he's had his momentary offs, which is usual for a guy who's, you know, it's much easier to slow a person down than to make someone faster. So if they crash because they're going too fast, you know, it's easier to control that. You know, it's when they're never quick and they crash, they're a problem.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because when we spoke to Marc Genet back in Bahrain, he felt that Charles had matured as a driver. See, I would agree with you that in the past, I've always wondered whether under massive amounts of pressure, whether he can come through. There's no doubt that he has performed under huge amounts of personal pressure. You remember the tragedies that he has endured, and he's come out fighting and put in unbelievable performances when you consider his mind and heart must have been elsewhere. So that's certainly true. But I'm just thinking about the likes of Monaco. This is a circuit that he's never actually finished a Grand Prix on, let alone won on. And expectations were so high last year, only for him to crashed the car, still put it on pole. That was the irony, wasn't it, if you remember? But the damage sustained in that crash meant that the car couldn't take part in the race. I think this year feels different. I feel that he's just calmer.
Yep. And I think everything about Ferrari feels different. I think Leclerc is a hugely instinctive driver, and that allows him to rise to the big occasion, as Davide and Damon were saying. But also, I think he's got the support from Ferrari this year. Their pit stops have been absolutely on fantastic every time. And they just feel ready. I feel they feel ready, whereas I feel Red Bull and Mercedes in particular just feel a little bit undercooked, probably because of all the battling they did last year, whereas Ferrari have been waiting for this moment. And for Carlos, he's a more cerebral driver than Charles Leclerc. So I think when the car isn't quite as good as it is now, like last year, it wasn't a surprise to me that Sainz was able to work out how to get more out of it, sitting down with his engineers, going through the data, whereas now the car is there and it just requires you to take that chip out of your brain and get on with it. Leclerc is your man.
And you do wonder if Carlos will be kicking himself further down the season when he looks back at the start and realises how dominant the Ferrari was and may still be throughout the season. We don't know yet, but with the development curve set to be incredibly steep and the likes of Mercedes, I'm sure, will bounce back. In fact, they already are. You know, they're on the podium. They're sitting second in the constructors, supposedly with a rubbish car. So, you know, you can't ever write them off. But my point is that if Carlos can't capitalise now, you know, ruining the chances, ruining those missed chances.
Well, it's not too late. And I agree with Davide. You know, he was saying this is almost a career-defining race for Carlos Sainz.
Oh, poor chap. I mean, yeah, so
let's,
much pressure.
Let's not put any pressure on him. Oh. But, you know.
No, but actually, do you know something? Just thinking about it now, this is going to be one of the biggest tests for Charles. In Italy, on home turf, at Ferrari's backyard, and he's now expected to win.
Yeah, but he's done it before, though.
He won at Monza in 19.
He wasn't expected to win there, although they were having a decent run of form then, weren't they?
No, exactly. The unexpected win is... Yeah, it's when you turn up. This is where driving Ferrari is different. Being in Ferrari is different. You know, you've got the entire nation. It's a national emblem in the way that we just don't even get. I mean, you know, the most famous British team, you know, we've got, you know, it doesn't compare to the way it is, the intensity that there will be in Italy this coming weekend.
But the team can protect him from a lot of that, can't they? They can limit his exposure to the amount of interviews he has to do.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
He's just got to get into the track because the fans will be wanting to stop him. But once he's in...
I gather that's going to be fairly tricky for any of us with just one road going in. Because, of course, when we went last year, it was under COVID and there were no fans. But now they're back in force. The Tifosi will be there in their tens of thousands. Apparently, it
might
be a bit of a
struggle. Hill, Pinks. You've got to talk about the hill when you're at Imola. So overlooking that final, it used to be a chicane. It's more, you're now overlooking Rivazza, really. But there's this hill and it's back in the sort of 90s, in the sort of Schumacher era, late 90s, early 2000s. It was rammed, wasn't it, Damon? I mean, when you won those couple of races in 95, 96.
It was a campsite. It was like watching, you know, the armies camping on the hillsides before a battle. You know, it would be people staying up all night and they'd be covered in plastic bags and they'd have tables set up and it was just wall-to-wall people, this whole hillside. It's unbelievable. You're right. But I just want to throw in one little memory I've got, which is when I first started testing Williams. Well, my very, very first test I did at a proper track, rather than a small stillstone backyard track we were at. I went to Imola and I had Riccardo Patrese I was getting in the car after Riccardo, and we were in the garage and it was springtime and they have these dandelions that go crazy in that part of the world, and they just the place is like a fog of dandelions, and they kind of collect together and they roll down the track, and you see a car go past and it busts through one of these balls of dandelions and they all go everywhere, and it was warm and it was, and there were people sitting outside, the locals would come out and sit outside the Ferrari garage with their cheese and their wine on a bench. And they'd, every time a Ferrari came out the garage, everyone cheered and just went crazy. And it was just amazing. The atmosphere there was just, it was, I'll never forget that. And that was one of the, you know, it was very relaxed and there wasn't any pressure or anything. It was just testing. But it was Gerhard and John Lacey, and they kind of, they were just living gods as far as the Italians were concerned.
Well, we need to talk Red Bull because they are currently third in the championship. And poor old Max down in sixth, 46 points behind Charles Leclerc. And in fact, Charles Leclerc's lead over George Russell in second is bigger than at any other time last year through the season. I mean, it's pretty crazy after three races. But Max is saying that he's not even thinking about the championship at this stage. Just how frustrating, Damon, is it to have a quick car that's not reliable? I mean, you have to be on constant tenterhooks.
I think Max is coping well. I mean, they've had a few expressions of displeasure, like, you know, using words like unacceptable. And I think that also Christian Horner has also agreed with that, you know, that it's not acceptable. They need to fix this problem. But, you know, at least if you've got a quick car, he also said, you know, it's better to have a quick car that's not reliable than a slow car that is reliable. Once you've got the speed, you can work on the other bits. So it's, they will be working furiously to fix that. But it's been very costly, you have to say. And meanwhile, the Ferrari is just, you know, going round and round like a metronome.
And without oversimplifying it, TC, is it a case of all of these reliability issues being related? And can we put it down to the fact that it's perhaps a few balls dropped between the handover from Honda to Red Bull in terms of the powertrain?
Pinks, I can't answer either of those questions because we haven't heard from Red Bull exactly what the cause of the problem was in Melbourne. We know that there was a fuel pickup problem in Bahrain, of course, that the DNF, the double DNF that they suffered there. But, you know, you're saying, oh, Max is dealing with it well. He was an angry man after the race in Melbourne. I really sensed it when he was in the pen. I think using a word unacceptable is pretty hard on your team, actually. Everyone has been working round the clock, particularly after such an intense title fight last year. But all he said is, I don't need upgrades on this car. All I need is reliability and I can do the rest. That was his tune after the race. And he's probably not wrong, but till they get all their ducks in a row, I would be asking him, if I were Christian Horner, just to throttle back a little bit on some of the stuff he's been saying.
Oh, so difficult, though. Come on. If you know, if he's standing back and accepting it.
I'm not saying
it,
accept
and
I, you know, it. Everyone is just working flat out to try and solve it.
Sure. But we want to see that raw emotion. Unacceptable is the only word that he used. I do agree it's quite a loaded word. But on the other hand, if someone just stands in the pen and is fairly phlegmatic about what's just happened and they've got a second DNF out of three races, you're like, hang on a minute, this world championship slipping away from you here.
I've got a quote here. He said apparently that he'd need 45 at this rate, he'd need 45 races to be champion. Well, you know, so he's right. I mean, what can you say?
Careful what you wish for. You might just have that in a few years.
At that rate, he won't be champion is actually the truth because, you know, you need to finish. And but his, it is frustrating when your car breaks down. I can experience that.
What would you say in the pen after a race, Damon, when you were suffering from reliability issues?
Well, there wasn't the pen, well, Tom. True. So, you know, it was much easier in my day. You know, we had a press conference if we were, you know, and then after the race, the journalists would come round to the motorhome and ask a few questions. You get on your plane, you go home. I mean, they work so hard. They are constantly bombarded. The moment they get out of the car, I don't know how they'd cope, honestly, these drivers today. It's just relentlessly, the interviews and stuff is, I wouldn't be able to cope very well. So I probably would drop a few clangers and say, like, I am really bleep, bleep, bleep. Well, you know, how do you feel? They ask you how you feel. Well, I'm being philosophical about it. No, it really is. Well, it's not a good time to talk to them.
Okay, Damon, tell us then, because whilst how do you feel is like the world's worst question, we do want to understand the emotions and the adrenaline that's searing through your veins. Describe to us the feeling when you're in that car and you're feeling that you're on for a race win and everything is coming together nicely, only for it to stop. I've just got a flashback to Bottas in the pits in Monaco, when you couldn't get the wheel gun back off. And I was just thinking, how on earth must he process the emotions in that moment? So in answer to your question, how did you feel?
Well, you can't count anything that's not happened yet, you know, chickens and eggs and all that stuff. So you basically should have, as a driver, the mindset that...
Nothing's guaranteed.
I was going to say something, it's a swear word, but you know, stuff happens, you know. And also that, you know, until that car is over the line and the race is done, anything can happen and probably will, as Murray famously used to say. You know, it is that you have to have that attitude. So when, of course, you come in for your pit stop, you're kind of half your mind is going, it's going to go well, something's wrong. And then from that point onwards, you're kind of in this reset mode. You kind of go, okay, it's how bad is it going to be?
Yeah.
You know, is it going to be one place? Is it going to be two places? What am I going to have to do to recover that? So you're just always in survival, fight to the end mode. And then afterwards, the worst thing is if you've made a mistake. That's the worst one. If something breaks down, you kind of go, well, I couldn't do anything about that. There's something's broken. But if you make a mistake, that is the most awful feeling.
I remember you being quite philosophical after Hungary 97, Damon, when you were on to win that race until, what, with two laps to go?
Yeah, but I still finished second.
Is that the difference? Okay, so if you'd actually DNF'd...
Well, I got something.
Yeah.
I guess it's better than absolutely nothing. But, you know, it would have been lovely fairy tale to have won. But, you know, if you go through your career and try and put it right in your mind, you know, as to what should have happened, then you're living in a dream world. It's not reality. The reality is what actually happens. And they've got to deal with it. It's hard. It's hard. The sport is hard.
Now, this weekend is special for many reasons, not least because Formula One is coming to Europe for the first time in 2022, but also because we've got our first sprint race of the year. And there'll be many of you, including myself until recently, that might need reminding what that actually means and the format that takes. So should we have a quick reminder?
Oh, God, I need reminding. Wait a minute. They do everything... On the Friday?
Yes, indeed. We do have entertainment from the Friday because qualifying comes forward to the Friday. It's Q1, Q2 and Q3 as normal. The results of that session set the grid for the sprint on Saturday. The sprint is a shorter race, roughly 100 kilometres or a third as long as a full Grand Prix. It takes about half an hour. Drivers don't have to pit if they don't want to. And that means to gain position, you have to overtake on the track, which makes it much more exciting for all of us. And the driver who wins the sprint race gets 8 points. The points go all the way down to eighth place. And the result of the sprint race sets the grid for the Grand Prix on Sunday, which runs exactly the same as normal.
And there's one other thing, Pinks. There's one other thing. And this was one of my real bugbears last year. But the person who sets the fastest lap in qualifying on Friday will be the man awarded pole position in the record books. And that always felt uncomfortable last year when it was actually the person who won the sprint last year who got that accolade. So yes, whoever sets the fastest time on Friday qualifying will be awarded the pole position in the statistics books.
I do think that these sprint race format weekends are so interesting, and I want to get your take on the wider implications for the teams. But the more obvious ones are that there are more points on offer this weekend, a maximum of 34. So we could see some big point swings in the championship standings. There's a chance for a driver who qualifies badly or gets a penalty to recover by racing through the field in the sprint. Of course, who can forget Lewis Hamilton in Brazil last year? Damon, I think you put it down as the greatest race you've ever seen.
The greatest drive I've seen, you know, under the circumstances. Yeah. I thought it was astonishing. I mean, he basically won a Grand Prix and a half without making a single mistake and overtook everyone about twice, I think.
Yeah, because he started P20 in the sprint because of all those penalties, but he ended the race in first place on the Sunday. And now that the points go down to eight, we could see more racing throughout the field, which is always a good thing. What I'd like to know, though, are the sort of wider implications. Does more racing put more stress on the engines? Are sprint weekends more challenging for the teams with reliability issues? And in terms of upgrades, are we going to see any upgrades in Imola? Because, of course, they have limited practice time. So I gather Ferrari have said they won't be bringing any until later in the European season for that very reason.
Well, Ferrari are sitting pretty at the top, aren't they? I think they can still win this race without upgrading their car. But we are going to see some upgrades. Alpine are going to be bringing a new floor that was originally scheduled for Miami, but they've managed to pull that forward to Imola, maybe only on one of their cars. Hey, I wonder, how do you decide, Damon, within a team? You've got one new floor coming at Alpine this weekend. Who gets it?
Well, we used to have at Williams, it used to be it would alternate. So if there was an update, you know, one, the other driver would get it this time and next time the other guy would get it. But then obviously each team starts to put all its eggs in one of the driver's baskets more than the other. Some drivers used to have a rule that they got all the updates way in advance of the other driver, which is jolly unfair on the other driver. But then that's life.
If you're going on performance, Damon, it should go to Ocon. He's got 20 points to Alonso's 2. And yet I think it will go to Fernando because...
Oh, why? Why?
Because I kind of feel like he's a bit scarier and there's the team leader.
You know, it should be a decision that's down to the team, not to the driver. I think that's the right way to do it, because then they can choose. There may be a strategic good reason to give it to a driver who's maybe had one before in the past. So, you know, you can't make a hard and fast rule, because you'll get yourself caught out by that eventually at some point. You have to be flexible, but try to be fair and explain it to the other driver. Say, listen, we're going to do it this week, we're going to do this, and just so you know, and not have a situation where you don't tell, or the other driver finds out that their teammate has gotten something that they didn't have access to, you know. And that's used to get punch-ups with Piquet and Mansell, didn't you, because of someone got a diff that they thought they should have had or something like that.
So I think, anyway, we are going to see some upgrades. And then does it put more stress on the engines? Well, yes, they're doing more mileage over the weekend. There's an interesting sort of strategic point to be made about engines this year, that with so many races, what are we, 23, and only 3 permitted power units, I think a lot of the teams now are saying, we're not going to get to the end of this season on the 3. And we're just going to accept the grid penalties when they come, when we exceed that number. And Alpine is a classic case of that. Fernando Alonso is already on his 3rd power unit. 3 races, 3 power units. So he's obviously, I think, thinking, I'm going to have to take a penalty at some point.
Well, in a way, it's great, isn't it? I mean, it just means you can't forward project a result. I mean, if Ferrari are 100% reliable, then everyone's got a problem, because it's going to be, they are just going to be walking it. But you know, if there's any unreliability, then and people start doing that, you've got a very randomized championship, which is what you kind of want, because it keeps the jeopardy going.
We have to give a shout out to McLaren, a double points finish for them in Australia, and the first points of the season for Daniel Ricciardo. He was actually one of the few top drivers apart from Sebastian Vettel yet to score a point going into his home race. So great to see. And I mean, it just must be a big relief, mustn't it?
He was pumped after the race in Australia, but I also felt he wanted more. And I think that's a huge turning point for Daniel, in that last year, at any point, okay, excluding Monza, but at any other point last year, if he'd finished on Lando Norris's gearbox, I think he would have been overjoyed, because he was struggling with that car. This year, he finishes on Lando Norris's gearbox and actually wasn't totally happy, relieved to get points on the board, but thinks there was more performance to come. So I think that bodes well for Daniel Ricciardo in terms of where he's at with this car. He's clearly happier with it than he was last year's.
But wasn't he told to hold position behind Lando? He was quicker than him, but told to keep it in 6.
I think you're right, Nat.
So that would explain, Tom, why he was frustrated if he felt that he could have been P5 or indeed even higher.
But hey, still a great weekend for Daniel. And I always think Formula One is in a good place when Ferrari are doing well. And I also feel that with Daniel Ricciardo, because he's such a ray of light, isn't he? And such a ray of sunshine on everything that he does within the sport, that when he's going well, the sport's in a good place as well. And, you know, you guys weren't in Melbourne, but the atmosphere there was every bit as good as I'm expecting it to be at Imola. And I would say 75% of the crowd, and we're talking 130,000 people on race day, was dressed in orange, papaya caps. And It was fantastic. And Daniel really rose to the occasion. Everywhere he went, people wanted a slice of him. And he went into the fan zone and was just... There was so much love for him. So we need Daniel back up there. The evidence is, I think, that McLaren are finally getting it together and that this car isn't as bad as everyone feared after the first race in Bahrain. It's well balanced, needs more downforce. And then on a particular type of track, what was interesting about Melbourne, actually, is that the new asphalt there bowled the teams a bit of a googly. The Ferrari seems to be just brilliant everywhere. But you remember we saw Alfa Romeo were just a little bit off where they'd been at the opening two rounds. Haas the same. And I think maybe when we're going back to an old track like Imola with old asphalt, we may see, I think, more of a familiar pecking order that we saw at the opening two races than we got in Melbourne.
So, Tom, you say that F1 is in a good place with Daniel Ricciardo in a good place. F1 Nation is in a good place when Grace Ricciardo is in a good place. Isn't she lovely?
She was so lovely. And do you know what? I think she really suffers during the races as a mum.
Oh, she does.
Yeah.
She does. She prays. She meditates. She paces around. I mean, I can't imagine how stressful it must be to watch your boy race.
But she was lovely. And actually, she gave us one or two little insights about Daniel and what a sort of, she sort of said he's been always been a bit of a show off and loves playing to the crowd. And you can so see that, can't you?
I think that's an underestimation, isn't it? That's a gross understatement of Daniel Ricciardo, who he just loves the stage. He's a great performer. He's been so good. You're right. I mean, it's great to see him when he's competitive. I mean, it's a shame he had to hold back at the end, but it's a good team job he did there because Lando had some heating problems, and so he was asked to, if you don't mind, don't put him under too much pressure, and he did that job too. So I think that's kind of earned him a lot of brownie points. It's always better to be in a team when everyone feels good and you haven't got one driver's put the whole thing at jeopardy because they wanted to be selfish. But that's the dilemma drivers always find themselves in.
So have we got to that part in the show where we do Ask Damon? Damon?
Well, you know what? I think we're going to skip it this week because we've already had Ask Damon with Davide Vasecki basically asking me all the questions. All the questions were directed at me. Well, I don't know. What do you think? I don't know. Damon, what do you think? So those are the questions for Ask Damon this week. All of them came from Davide Vasecki from Italy. And so thank you, Davide, for those wonderful perceptive questions and putting me on the spot.
That's good enough for me. Any other business then, chaps?
Just excited, Pinks. Love Imola. In fact, is there a circuit in the world with better corner names than Imola? I mean, Tamburello, Tosa,
right.
Piratella, Acqua Minerale, Variante Alta. It's just, it's as a racetrack should sound, isn't it?
Before I knew what the names were, I used to think Murray was saying into the rigatoni and through the ravioli. And basically,
that's another advert you did with Murray.
yes. I remember that one.
It is an incredible track. I ran it last year with Ant Davidson. And you can't fail to be moved as you run around it. It's steeped in triumph and tragedy. And it's like a history lesson as you take to all those beautifully named corners, as you say. It's a very special place and one that we're privileged to go to.
The old track was slightly different. And there's someone very special who still retains and will retain for all time that lap record, a certain Jill Villeneuve, who put in the fastest lap on the previous formation of the circuit, and it stood for all time.
Well, and Damon, it's 40 years since that infamous race in 1982 when only 14 cars started because, hey, there was a political battle going on in Formula One. We don't need to get into that. But we saw that sensational battle, didn't we, that weekend between Gilles Villeneuve and Didier Pironi. And Pironi overtook Gilles on the last lap, and after the race, Villeneuve said he was never going to speak to Pironi ever again. And those were prophetic words because 2 weeks later, of course, he tragically lost his life at Zolder. But that all happened at Imola. And then fast forward to 1989 and Senna and Prost fell out at Imola. Everyone falls out at Imola. Did you fall out with anyone at Imola? But just Senna and Prost, of course, fell out in 89.
I got told off by Senna there. So that was the kind of falling out that I didn't really have a relationship to fall out of.
Well, go on. What did he say?
He basically told me after the race that I'd done something naughty to stop him overtaking me in 93. But I thought, coming from him,
Brake test? Drive him off the track?
No, I just got it. I just didn't let him pass, you know. But then I had let him pass at Donington. So, when he famously swept past everyone in the wet and did his stunning Donington victory. Falling outs. Let's hope we don't have any falling outs in Imola this year, eh, guys?
Absolutely. So it is ciao for now, and thank you for listening. F1 Nation will be back on Tuesday, the 26th of April, with the last word on the Emilia-Romagna Grand Prix. If you haven't already, hit the follow button on your podcast app so you get our next episode as soon as it's released. F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.